12 this evening, which is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So Judy, we're ready to hear what you have to say. We've got a little token of our appreciation here for you.
Aww, thank you.
Hold on to that while you speak or whatever you want to do.
Thank you.
Hi. How are you, friend? Hi, everybody. How are you? It's good to see y'all. Hey, listen, it's a great day to be sober, isn't it? So my name is Judy. I'm an alcoholic, and if you don't know by now, I love, love, love Alcoholics Anonymous. If it hadn't been for Alcoholics Anonymous, I never would have learned how to live. I don't know what I called what I was doing before I got here, but trust me, it was not living. It was hoping to die every day, praying to die, and continuing to live. And I look at it, you know, I'm a visual learner, so I look at it as my life was mostly in black and white, and mostly in black, with no color, no light, no hope whatsoever. And when I got here, I started seeing technicolor. A big change. So that was the beginning of a spiritual experience, wasn't it? Because my mind and my perceptions started to change, and that's what is described as a spiritual experience. Step 12 tells us what? Having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, right? So what are the steps? The steps are 1 through 12. And once we start looking at those steps and considering them and begin to have a willingness to like even think about it, or listen to the people in the meetings, or maybe write down something that you learned at every meeting you go to. You heard me say that's what my sponsor had me do, and I still do it. I have a book and I have notes, and you know, I've shared some of that stuff with you. And I think that's a really good habit to get into. When I sponsor, I tell the girls to do that. I don't know if they do or not, but I, you know, ask them to. I should start checking up on that, actually. I'm going to say, let me see your gems. Let me see. Tell me what you learned at that meeting. You know, they'll probably be like, what? No, I'm teasing. The girls that I sponsor are my biggest joy. I can tell you, without a doubt, when I got here, I had no purpose. I had no direction. I had no value. I was not able to contribute in any positive way. And since I've been here, what you have taught me and allowed me to do and showed me, actually guide me, through your role modeling, through your actions, is you have allowed me to have a purpose. And I know, you've heard it said that there's two important days in your life, right? The day you were born, and the day you know why you were born. And that, you know, when I got here, you're going to laugh. Well, you won't laugh because you know me. I thought that I was chosen, because I'm special, to be sober so I could win a Nobel Peace Prize. And I didn't think I could ever be up to the job. I just thought, I mean, where did that come from? You know, I couldn't find my ass with two hands, but, you know, let me accept this, you know, wonderful, you know. I know without a question of a doubt the reason that I was born, the reason that I'm living, the reason that I'm here is so that I can be helpful to another female alcoholic, particularly. I've shared with you that I'm kind of like a grandma figure to a lot of young men in my community, and they come to me for some guidance and help too. I don't sponsor them, but I do help them along the way with maybe their daughter or, you know, their wife or whatever. And I love doing that. It's what I live for. The principles that you've allowed me to learn about through applying the steps in my life and through taking the action to do that have been remarkable in changing my life in so many ways. So that I think so much more about others than I do myself anymore. You know, the characteristics of honesty and courage, integrity, dignity, non-judgmental attitudes, love and tolerance being our code. These are the things that are most important in my life. And I really try to behave that way, no matter if I'm here in a meeting, if I'm just with my family, or if I'm with my community, or in an employment opportunity. And recently, one of the administrative people from the hospital in my town called me and said, you know, you were recommended to help us at the hospital, if you're able to, on a Monday and Thursday morning, to be the greeter for everybody that comes in the hospital. So they have a security guard that checks temperatures and makes sure face mask and no knives or anything like that. And then they said, you know, out of all the people, you're the name that came up. And we're wondering if you can do it while one of the other girls has surgery. Well, sure, why not? I had no reason to say no. So, I mean, it's those kinds of opportunities that never would have been available. Nobody would have called me from a hospital, except maybe from a psych ward. You know, are you ready? You ready to come in now? And so I get to greet the people that are coming in for surgery or for some procedure or for a test, and they're anxious and nervous. And I don't know. Everybody tells me that's kind of my calling, that I just have a way of settling people down and making them feel comfortable. And so that's an honor and a privilege, and I'm that way because that's what you taught me. That's what I learned from you, and I want to thank you for that gift. I want to thank you for the gift of my life. I was thinking about this all day, and I thought, oh my goodness. Oh, how do I explain? It's really hard to explain the gratitude that I have for the kind of life that I have. You know, I mean, in a short while, I'm going to be flying off to Santa Fe for 6 weeks with a bunch of crazy-ass women out there and just doing whatever I want to. And my daughter gets to come and spend a week with me, and her and I are just going to, you know, she's a metal artist, and so we're going to have a good time with the cultural and the artistic, wonderful things to see and do out there in Santa Fe. She's never been. I'm blessed beyond measure. I don't know. Blessed beyond measure. There's going to be a big, it's called the Taos Fiesta. It's a big conference out there in September, and a lady called me Ruth. I had never met her, and she said, your name came up, and we'd like to invite you to be the Sunday morning speaker. And I said, oh my gosh, okay. I have no reason to say no, so of course I'll do that. These are things that happen as a result of doing the next right thing. I had a little girl that I sponsor. I don't know if I'm getting off. I'm just sharing with you my life and how I incorporate a spiritual experience and identify that in my life almost on a daily basis. And then also, how do I practice these principles, and a little bit of how I help people. And that encompasses step 12, so I hope that's all right with you how I'm doing it. Well, it has to be. because this is what I got. So now I forgot where I was.
Little girl.
Yeah, she just celebrated a year of sobriety, and her family, but she was pretty much in the news. She was like in the national news, and she had done some things that were not really legal in our community, and she made headlines. And so she really, she embarrassed her family beyond measure, and her kids didn't want to talk to her, and she was really troubled and having a hard time. And she's been to this meeting with me, and she doesn't care if I share this with you. And
So her children weren't talking to her, and, you know, we just gathered around her and walked with her and held her up when she couldn't stand, and she, you know, was able to stay sober and get through the 12 steps, and she is a remarkable miracle, honestly. She's doing incredibly well. And it wasn't but maybe a month ago, and her son called her after almost over a year of not speaking to her, not having, and really doing some things that were very harmful. And other family members kind of did the same thing, and she was devastated. And I'm like, you know, if they're talking about you, they're leaving me alone, so that's a good thing. You know, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And she did. She hung on. She didn't believe that things were going to get better. And her son called, and my goodness, the granddaughter, little Parker, wanted to spend the night with her. So, you know, these, if you sponsored people, you know what that's like. You know what it's like to watch them really struggle and then to have a miraculous thing happen to them where you say, I'm so glad you held on. I'm so glad you waited for the miracle to happen. And other things became easier in her life. And she just is a remarkable role model for me, and she helps me in many different ways. I sponsored early on, I wanted to say this, I was thinking about this on the way over. It's kind of a cute story. I love my beginnings in AA. I think about all the people that helped me when I got here, and so many of them are no longer with us. Sometimes it's really hard for me to share about it, but they were so incredibly service-oriented and so into helping fellow alcoholics. Just absolutely unbelievable. And I really feel that I learned from the best. They were the greatest, the men and the women, the men and women that were married and couples and kind of, you know, sheltered me and helped me along and invited me to different events and helped me feel comfortable and helped me grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And anyway, they we don't anymore so much. Once in a while, I can't even remember when the last time was. I got a 12-step call. I mean, do you guys do that out here anymore? Like, okay. So you don't actually go to anyone's home and share your experience, strength, and hope. Well, that's how we did it in 1978 when I got sober. You know, central office would call you. You'd put your name on a list after you had a year of sobriety. I think that, I could be wrong, but I think that's what you had to have. And anyway, my name was on the list, and I got called frequently. I lived in Euclid, Ohio, in my early sobriety. And they called one day, and they said, we have a blind woman who called for help, and she lives by you. Here's the address. Go see her. Her name is Carla. And boy, I just fell in love with Carla. She was such a sweetheart. She taught me a lot. And she taught me how to identify food on a plate for a person who has no sight, and how to help them navigate across the street without danger. And just, she helped me in so many ways. I remember the first time I had her over for coffee, and she had to use the restroom, and she came out and she said, yeah, I think we're going to be good together. She said, you keep a clean house. And I thought, how does she know this? And she said, I always check the sink. You know, I always check the sink. I just take my hand around the sink. And, it, you know, you can tell if it's clean. Oh, well, I was glad I cleaned the bathroom. You know? It's funny the things you learn. And I learned a lot about her. And then she didn't stay. She didn't stay in the program. So that was a loss. And many of the people that I sponsored early on didn't stay, but I stayed. I didn't drink, and I think that's what the purpose is. Well, it's double purpose. So anyway, not shortly after that, about a month later, we were having a conference in my community, and they needed someone to go to Pennsylvania and pick up Esther Robinson, Does anybody know that woman? Do you know her, Kevin? Oh my gosh. So she was a black woman. She was a big woman, and she was blind. And she was very much of her, she didn't care what you thought. And she spoke her mind. And she stood at the podium and she said, you know, she said, I want to let everybody know, effing, I won't say the word because I can't say it from the podium. And I try not to say it. She said, we'll not get you drunk. She said, drinking will get you drunk. So she said, just stop with the nonsense thinking if you have sex, you're going to get drunk. If you have sex, I hope you have a good time, you know. I mean, she just was very controversial. So I had the privilege of going and picking her up. So when she said, I hope we're going to stop for lunch. Well, I didn't know. Okay, great, let's do that. So we stopped at a service plaza, and she said, I want to tell you how to, you know, put the food on the plate. And I said, well, I already know about that. And she said, oh, okay. Well, put the meat at 12 and the vegetables at 3. And, you know, and so everything happens, you know, kind of, you know, for what's coming next. So we learn things and then we can apply them. So the principles of being of service, if there's no reason for you to say no, then go ahead and do it. If you have another important commitment or you've made a promise to someone to do something else, then your answer has to be, no, I can't do it. But if you have no commitments and you're considering, well, I hope your answer is yes, because it is in service, it is in helping others that we find the joy of life and living and in our reason for being. I mean, a purposeless life is, I don't know, it's a really sad life. It's really dark, very dark. I don't know. I've always had a gang of women that I've sponsored. And I'll tell you, last night I went to dinner with a sponsor and then a gal that she sponsors. And the gal that she sponsors celebrated 11 years. And this little gal said to me when my sponsor was in the restroom, she goes, will you please get me under your wing? Can I be part of the Judy group over here? And that's another thing. And when she said that, I thought, oh God, I hope people don't think it's a Judy group, for God's sake. Because it isn't. It's a group that's open to anybody. I can't stand exclusive. I can't function in any kind of an exclusive environment. It has to be inclusive. It has to be including whoever needs to be there, whoever wants to be there. I can't do it any other way. Don't, you know, there's women in my community, it makes me crazy. They have a lot of years of sobriety and they're very, very particular about who they're going to let in their house. Why? Why? Why is this? They don't want new people in their house because they might steal something. God, if you come to my house and you like something in my house, here, take it home. Enjoy it. It was mine. It was a gift. Now you can have it. Enjoy. But I wasn't that way when I first got here. No, it was like, oh my God, you know. Well, I didn't have very much. Now I have a lot. Whatever. You know, that's just the way it is. A young lady came in and she said, oh my God, I love that table. And I said, well, we'll put it in the car and take it home for you. And she said, no, I didn't mean that. And I said, well, I did. I did. You can have it. I have another one out in the garage. You know, that's just how it is. I don't know. My refrigerator is open. If you're hungry, come and, you know, make a sandwich. Whatever. Or, you know, cook something. We'll have a meal together. My home, I hope, is a place where you can come if you're tired and rest and feel safe. My home is a place where you can come and share your concerns or challenges. If you have that going on, you just need You just need to be heard. You need to know that someone gives a shit. I do. I do. And someone did that for me, and that's why I have to do it for others. It's not that I have to do it for others. I want to do it for others. It's why I'm here. And if you're hungry, please let me feed you. I'd love to cook. Yeah. So my house is kind of like a safe harbor for these girls. And they come, and I got a new couch, and it has at the end has this lounge, you know, where you can... I love it. Oh, my God. Tom bought it for me. I get on that couch, and I say, I love this couch. And so all the girls come, and like they're fighting over who's going to get that seat. Yeah. So I sit in the hard chair. I think, okay. We can do anything for a day, right? Yeah. My sister made it through her surgery. I called her up. I said, oh my God, you're alive. They didn't kill you. She laughed. I have to keep her spirits up. She had the cervical bone replacement and the plate and screws. Cervical, they went in through the front of her throat. I can't imagine. And my other sister is doing well with the cancer, although I'm going to go this weekend and pick up, I don't know, I got to figure out what color wigs I'm going to get for her. I think I shared with you, her daughter makes me crazy. Medicare would pay for her wig, but Diana just doesn't have time to take her. Family stuff, you know, you can get really aggravated. But instead of getting aggravated, I'm trying to practice the principle, what, of love and tolerance. Of thinking, well, Diana's really busy. She has four young kids. Not young, but... And so, okay, I'll go and get the wigs. It'll be fun. I know how to do it because I shaved my head when Julie needed some help with her chemo and lost her hair. So I know where to go, and... I'll get her one of every color. I was thinking last night, I think she'd look really good in red ear. She'll probably kill me. What do you want me to do with this? Although she can't say that, but I can tell that she's thinking that. Because her speech and her understanding capabilities were rendered very, very difficult as a result of a horrendous stroke that she had, and she lost the use of her right side. And after that, she got cancer, and then she got breast cancer and had to have a mastectomy, and then she got lung cancer, and so she's in treatment for that now. And when I went to see her last week, her hair is going to be gone very soon, and I just was so aggravated that her daughter hadn't done anything yet for her. Just okay, she's probably busy. I want to share something for, do you guys do, do you buy stuff from the Grapevine? Do you go online and look and see what they have in new publications and kind of pick up a book now and then? I have so many books, I love them, and, you know, I can, have you guys looked at this? Oh my God, there is some great stuff in here. I'm going to read. Yeah.
That's the book.
Yeah, So I'm going to read this, and then maybe you can all... you have one here. The name of it says, In Order to Apologize. This has to do with steps and listening to old-timers. It says, an old-timer was going off in a meeting explaining how the steps were numbered because they are meant to be worked in order. We do that, don't we, as old-timers? He went on to say that you can't skip ahead... because that would be a formula for disaster. Oh, Lord. A newcomer carrying a coffee pot came from the kitchen and tripped and spilled some coffee on the old-timer. And the old-timer said, My God, aren't you going to apologize? And she said, No, I'm not on step 9 yet. There's all kinds of quirky things in that book, and they're really fun, and... You know, we're not a glum lot. We're not a glum lot. So let's remember. You know, I heard something a while back, and I use it a lot. you know, smile, because it gives your face something to do other than just sit on the front of your head, huh? You know, doesn't it? And smiling and laughter is really good. And what a great day when a gal that I sponsor, when I hear her just in a full-out explosion of laughter beyond anything, a good belly laugh, you know? It just means, oh my God, she went from like this to like this, and she can relax and be unique and be herself and enjoy, you know, others and what's going on at the time. It's a marvelous way of life. Oh my gosh, I'm kind of running out of stuff to say. I think I kind of covered step 12 in that.
Yeah.
And you think so, Kevin?
No, yeah.
He's the boss, you know. Over here in Erie, anyway. And I'm going to be so happy to be able to attend this meeting once I get back from Santa Fe and to hear some of what Tom is going to share next, starting next week. He says he doesn't know about that, but I think he'll be here and have something really good to say. I want to thank you all for listening. God bless you all.
Thank you, Judy. Is this on?
Push it.
It's on.
What have I done?
How about now? Can you hear me now?
There you go.
All right. It wasn't on, apparently. So now we would like to open things up for some questions and answers with our speaker. So anybody here in the room, if you have a question for Judy, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll bring you the microphone. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, feel free to unmute yourself whenever you're ready.
My name is Elijah. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
I missed you. I have two questions. When you was talking about the 12th step, and I remember like years ago, I must have had like 9 months, and I remember like going on them 12 step calls. And I mean, when I say I was young in the program, I was at the age of 16, so I've seen a lot, you know. And what made me like kind of was like a scary situation, because I remember like I used to have to like pour liquor out, pour it in the toilet, then I would have to put dirty needles in the toilet to flush it. And that was the most scariest thing in my life, to deal with that type of stuff. Now, the second thing that I wanted to say was that I just lost a friend a couple of days ago, and she came to the meeting, and the last thing that I said to her, please don't use, and I loved you, and I gave her a hug. Next thing that we know, she killed herself. And it hurted me so bad, but I was trying to give it away when it was freely given to me. But it's hard, you know, to like to try to help people, you know. And I really struggle with that, you know. I just lost my wife in October, so I'm still going through situation after situation, you know. And you know, it's not no rocket science. All I know is that I want to stay sober. You know, and it's hard, you know. I mean, even though I got a lot of time under my belt, but it's still hard, you know. And like you was talking about the people in general, you know, the clicking. I hate it. I've been hating it. I don't like the click. That's why I stay away from that type of stuff. It's madness, you know. So thanks for allowing me to share.
I was always told early on in my sobriety when I did a 12-step call, usually my sponsor went with me, and if she wasn't available, then another old-timer. I never went on a 12-step call alone, ever. So, maybe you can incorporate that. Yeah. And as far as losing people, You know, some of us are going to get to tell our stories here, and some aren't going to get to tell their stories. Yeah. It is hard. It's terrible. So we just have to keep making sure the doors are open, huh? So you just keep coming. Do not stop.
All right, we've got another hand.
Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Can you hear me with this mask on?
I can.
Okay. She says, take it off. Well, first thing I want to say is that I remember the first time that I ever saw or met you. And it was, and I don't know, my brain was so scrambled the first couple years, but I think it was my first year clean and sober. And I was at an international conference, in the first one I'd ever been to. I mean, I had no idea what to expect. And we were all at lunch, you were sitting like at the next table, and I know I was probably sitting like this, you know, I just remember how I felt. It was awful. And every time I looked over at you, you looked at me and smiled. And I thought to myself, someday I'm going to be that person, you know. And I hope I am now, you know. I hope I am. I think I am. I try to be. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, when you were talking about step 12, the integrity, courage, honesty, all of those things that I strive to be through, you know, all through my drinking days and all of that, I remember I used to say, someday I'm going to have integrity. Someday I'm going to have integrity, and I am going to be that trustworthy person, you know, like what the promises say. You know, they really, really, really come true, and I'm sure everybody knows that. They certainly came through for me. But one last thing I wanted to say as far as a... this isn't really a 12-step call, but I have a very good friend whose daughter passed away from this disease, and her daughter lives in New Hampshire. And one of the other ladies in this program, I just absolutely did not know what to do with my friend. You know, she's also, she's not in this program. So I called somebody that is in this program who lost a child to this disease, and I put them in touch with each other. And it's been really beautiful because now they've kind of connected and have become friends. And so I just, you know, I'm just so grateful for this program too. But I guess... my question that I had was, and what somebody that I'm sponsoring said to me, when will I get the, she used a different word, it wasn't integrity, but it was spirituality. When will I find spirituality? When will I, you know, be the person that people can trust? You know, and I said the normal, regular things, but somehow I felt that I didn't give... what would you say to that?
I would say trust is something to earn. And the measure of trust that I use, that I educate my girls, the people I sponsor, I say when you make a commitment, do you always keep it? If you don't always keep it, why? You need to either be dead or on the way to the hospital, because your word is the is the only thing that you have.
Right.
That is your measure of integrity. If you don't think or you're not sure, then don't say yes. say, I don't think I can manage that.
Mm-hmm.
So that they become to depend on you by your word.
Mm-hmm.
And your actions as a result of that. Did you keep that commitment? And once you do that again and again and again, then there's the evidence. She's trustworthy.
Right.
When she says something, she does it.
Mm-hmm.
When she says she's going to show up, she's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I have girls that I could trust, and there's some of the girls that I can't trust them.
Right.
Because they like to talk a good talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that maybe all of us are that way a little bit when we get here, so we have to learn, you know. And we learn how? By watching others, mm-hmm. by listening and saying, oh, I better clean that up, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what I do. On.
I like that, the measure of your word.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Who else has a question for Judy? Anybody on Zoom?
Hey, Judy. Ellen here.
Hi, Ellen.
Thanks so much again for sharing. I thoroughly enjoy listening to you. And maybe I wasn't listening close enough. Did you mention the name of the book that you got from the grapevine with the...
I didn't. The name of the book is Take Me to Your Sponsor.
Oh, I like it. Thank you. I like that. That sounds like one that would be good bathroom reading. Thanks, Jude.
You're welcome.
Hello, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks for doing this. Simple question. Throughout doing this whole process, were you able to learn anything new about yourself or about your sobriety, or did anything rekindle that you may have forgotten about, or how was this whole experience? Because I don't know if many people have really done something like this before. Thanks.
This was really quite an honor. And the experience brought me to a new level of appreciation and gratitude. Brought me to my knees a little more often. And helped me to pick up the phone a little more often. And got me into reading a little more often. This is what happens when you're trying to be of service to others. When you're trying to guide somebody or help them in the best possible way that you know how. You want to make sure you're doing the best job. And that's what you taught me. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I don't want to stand here and cry, but yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that question.
Who else has a question for Judy?
Hi, I'm Erin Staff. I'm recovering alcoholic. I'm in Zoom room. you mentioned about what really, you said a bunch of wonderful things. Every time I've watched it, I'm going to go back and watch the ones I missed. So thank you for doing this. You mentioned about, you know, the inclusiveness and being inclusive and not secluding people. I have found before in my drinking world that I was, you know, they call me a floater. Like, I had friends at all different types of groups. Sometimes what happens when you do that is you feel like you belong to so many different that you don't belong anywhere. Do you know what I mean? So when you're trying to include everybody, how do you do that without secluding yourself? I know it's probably a really complicated question. I don't know if I said that right, but how do you make sure that everybody feels inclusive without you being your own kind of loner? Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, sort of. I think I understand the question. Do I go on Zoom where there's 30 people and invite everyone over to dinner at my house? I don't think so. Do I go to my home group and invite them to an event? And invite everyone and make sure that they have the necessary tools to register or the transportation or you know, I try to find out if they need any financial help. You know, I kind of have a way of doing that, and I want to make sure that they have the means available to participate if they want to. No matter who they are, no matter where they're from, no matter what they look like or what they dress like, and I don't ever want anyone to feel like I ignored them. I guess, you know, that I didn't want to hear them, that I didn't want to participate in this wonderful journey with them. I would be devastated if that's what anyone thought about me. So I try not to make that happen. You know, growing up, I was excluded from so many things because of a lot of reasons. And I never felt like I mattered. And I guess with inclusion, to me, that says you matter. You have value. You have worth. I'm interested in what you have to say. And if you want help, please allow me to do that for you. Please allow me to help you. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judy, before we run out of time, I was quite disappointed that these weren't for me. But the group wanted to present you with these as a token of our appreciation. So, something nice to take home with you to remember us by.
Do you guys see this? Look at this. Look how beautiful that is. Oh my God.
And we do have a certificate for you here as well.
Oh, so wonderful.
Keep with your certificates.
Oh, terrific. Thank you so much.
And we do so much appreciate you making the effort to be here, whether it be over Zoom or here with us.
Yeah.
I think after the first step, you had said something about how you used to, you know, spend extra time at the meetings. It was never just an hour. You'd go out for pie afterwards.
Right.
I feel bad we can't do something like that right now. But, yeah. You know, keep visiting and maybe one of these times.
Yeah. You have some nice places to go for pie and stuff out here.
Yeah.
That'll happen. Yeah, that's what I said when I get back from Santa Fe and, you know, the girls free up a little bit, then, yeah, we'll be here and participate a little more.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we truly appreciate it. So thank you very, very much.